on the Hot Mic at Arch DevOps with Fritz, and I'm here today with Russell Nolte, founder of The Complete Creative. How are you doing today, sir?
Doing pretty good considering. Luckily, I work from home, so this is this new paradigm is not that big a change for me.
Yeah, it's like, as the standard day-to-day, I'm still at home, you know? So that's pretty cool. Well, I'm glad it's not disrupting you so much. I just want to kick things off and find out a little bit about your background. You know, I always enjoy getting together with creative people. I think I have that community really to thank that got me to where I am today, because I used to just have my network full of testers and QA people and developers and recruiters. And then I think the very first few people that I started getting a glimpse of a whole new world out there, a whole new world. And it was the creative area. And I'm like, holy moly, there's a bunch of stuff out here that I didn't even know was a thing. So you're the owner of The Complete Creative. How long have you been doing that?
Well, The Complete Creative is just one of three companies that I own. The first one is a Verizon dealership.
Okay.
The second one is a publishing company called Wannabe Press, which I've owned since 2014.
Okay.
And then in 2018, we spun off the nonfiction part of The Complete Creative the Wannabe Press into its own company called The Complete Creative. So it used to be that nonfiction and fiction both sort of lived at Wannabe Press, and now we have two separate sites for them. And two separate sort of brand identities for them as well. So I have been doing The Complete Creative. It launched officially in January of 2018.
Okay.
And we were in beta for about a year. And then we went live with a daily blog in 2019. And we introduced our podcast again, The Complete Creative, in last November.
Nice. Well, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So it sounds like this came as a result of, I don't know, like, were the fiction and nonfiction writers fighting with each other and you're just like, all right, we're going to make separate companies, or like, what brought that on?
Well, there's two people that really respond to the message that I put out. One of them is readers who don't care much about like the process of writing. A lot of the things that I do on The Complete Creative is like breaking down the business of being a creative person, and that kind of ruins the illusion for readers. So I wanted to keep that separate from the people who the writers who respond to my writing and the artists who respond to my writing, because they're mostly looking for tactical, practical tips and tricks and hacks on how to build a better creative business. So by separating them, I was able to keep the readers on one side and the writers and marketing clients on the other side.
Nice. You know, I've been on both sides of that coin myself. I still am. I'm not like, you know, fully into process and stuff, but you know, for the longest time I thought, kind of taking a creative approach to software development and stuff, I was like, I don't need process. It gets in the way and stuff. And then I got introduced to some people that were like gung ho about process, and I thought, wow, there's some really good stuff here. So I can see the benefits to both, but I also understand, like, you know, there's certain groups of people out there that just want, they like the art. They like the fluid ooey gooey. And then the other people that are like, we want to know about what the tactics are and stuff. So it sounds like a pretty smart move. Yeah. Separating
some
that out.
Some people are both. So there's a lot of creators who read my books and then read my blog and take my courses and do all of that stuff. But I think it's important to understand that people want to put you in a box.
Mm-hmm.
You can fight against that. God knows I fought against it for years, but people want to put you in a box and they will open everything and buy everything that you do while you're in that box. And when you go out of that box, they tune out. So, for me, it was nice to have two separate things so that I know when I'm talking to Wannabe Press, I'm dealing with like the emotions and feelings and like the process of writing a book but not like in the step to step, more like how it feels and like why I did stuff and like why certain characters did this and then the other. So it's kind of like behind the scenes, but like from a reader's perspective.
Right.
And then over on the other side, where I'm talking to this other side, it's very analytically how the process of how to do this, steps to like break through mental blocks and all of the things that like readers like don't care about really. Yeah. Very rarely I'll mold the two. So 2 weeks ago, I ran a live conference called WannaCon for my wannabe press people, but I filled it with a lot of creators who were from the complete creative side of it, and we ended up talking about process and business and all of these things. So sometimes I do mesh them together, but usually I try to keep the reader fans over on with the reader fan over in a place, and I talk to them like readers, and I keep the creative fans and the people who want the tactical stuff over so that I know how to talk to them. And they're similar and overlapping, their customer avatars, but they're also quite different in the method and mode of what they're looking for when they come across me.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. And I think with that approach, you know, a lot of people would probably not think to separate it out. So I'm really glad that you did, because it probably makes it a lot easier. Then you don't have to come up with a way. It sounds like you don't have to come up with a way to speak to a variety of people. You have one way to speak to the engineer type writers, and then another way to speak to the ooey gooey side of it, right? The readers.
Absolutely. And it's been really helpful. I'll be honest, like I kept them all together for a long time, but eventually our fan base started to grow exponentially. And we went from like a couple thousand people on our mailing list to at one point there was like 75,000 people on it.
What?
And it just ended up being that once it got that big, there were enough people to separate it out. So for many years, I kept it together while my audience was small. But now we've got we cut a lot of those people out of our mailing list. So it ranges between 10 and 20,000, depending on the month, for our reader side, and then somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 a month on our writer side. So there was like robustness on both sides enough to pull them out. And wow. What's interesting is they both basically make me the same amount of money every year. So the writer side is a tenth of what the readers do, but as far as like overall revenue at the end of the year, they pretty much make me the same amount of money each one.
Nice. How do you build a mailing list? I didn't plan to talk about that with you, but it's an interesting topic. And I know a lot of listeners to the podcast probably struggle with that as well, but how do you get a mailing list to go viral like that? What's your secret?
So this is actually my area of expertise.
Okay.
If anything, I have a course called Build a Rabid Fan Base, which literally this is my most popular course for the writers and creatives, is basically how to go from the main one to thousands. So the thing that most people and most ads you're going to see talk about like build a huge mailing list in a very short amount of time. And people start thinking about the big mailing list as the point, but that is not the point. I've built plenty of big audiences, including on Twitter, where I've got about 30,000 people that really don't respond. Cause I wasn't careful with how I built that, that audience.
Yeah.
So the most important thing is to have a really good idea of exactly who follows your work and why they follow your work.
Okay.
So the first step is to find your singular human who has the highest lifetime customer value and the lowest acquisition cost.
Okay.
Now, when you're talking about making a customer avatar, usually people are talking about like ages and sexes and all of these things and like making it very demographically specific. I prefer to think of it as unique character traits. So five character traits that really will unite your audience together. So I actually have anthropomorphized mailing list avatar in our mascot, Melissa the Wannabe.
Okay.
Now, Melissa has all of the characteristics that a that our main character, that our main characteristics that our, sorry, our customer avatar has. Mm-hmm. She's rebellious and creative and practical and no nonsense and loyal and like all, she's got all of the pieces in an encapsulated in one encapsulated sort of avatar persona. Mm-hmm. Now, in order to go and scale, now you have that one person and your job is to make something for them. So what you really want is to have one person and then like expand that out to 10 people. So the easiest way to do this is to talk to people who are already in your network, who are responding to you a lot. This is not your best friends. This is not your best friends. This is not your family. This is not, this is someone who is sort of 2 or 3 degrees out of that area. So I think of it like, it's almost 20 years since I was in high school. So if you have a high school friend you haven't talked to in a while, but they like respond and they are liking your posts and all of and like commenting and all of this stuff still, mm-hmm. that's a good bet that that is a good person to sort of survey about like why they care. Okay. And in the course, I go through a lot of different ways to figure out why they care and like their demographics, what their favorite books are, what their favorite movies are, whatever the thing is you're trying to do. So like if you're trying to build software, then it would be like their favorite pieces of software, whatever the thing is. Yeah. And then you go for that one person and you want to get 10 people, really. You want to like do the same sort of interview survey for 10 people because you're looking for the commonalities.
Okay.
Once you have those commonalities, then step two is sort of, you want to have a product for them. You need to have something for them to like get them interested in your work, right? And it doesn't have to be like a finalized product. It doesn't have to be even something you pay for, they have to pay for, but it needs to be something that's really going to attract them. So for instance, you're talking about audiences. I have a free webinar, 20-minute webinar called all about how to build a perfect audience, target it from one, and then scale it up. So if I were to target someone like you who is interested in a mailing list, I would then have that free thing that you could be like, hey, go to thecompletecreative.com/audience to get that free webinar. And then there's an autoresponder sequence after that like will like try and get you to like not just love the webinar, but love me and fall into our and become an active member of our community.
Nice.
So you need the person and then the product. Now, you really want to know what the main product is going to be so that you can create a lead magnet from that. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to finish the main product before you offer the lead magnet. So you need to know that person enough that you can design something for them, but it's not exactly what they want because people are very bad at telling you what they actually want.
Yeah.
They are very good at telling you the feelings and like things they like, and like then you have to do some work and say, okay, you said you liked all of these things, here is the final design of this thing. Mm-hmm. And then if you've done it right, then it's magic. I'll give you an example of this. I have a publishing company called Wannabe Press. Mm-hmm. We had released a book called Katrina Hates the Dead in 2015 that went really well. Mm-hmm. It was the follow-up to our book, Ichabod Jones Monster Hunter. They were both kind of post-apocalyptic Monster Hunter books, like fun and like action-packed. Mm-hmm. And the Katrina did better than Ichabod. So we thought we were like, I was onto something. But then the next three books that I put out were a mystery novel to all in blog posts, a kid's book about farting, and then a sci-fi novel. None of those went well. In fact, they all did progressively worse and worse and worse from that big book. So I went back and I said, and I asked my audience, I said, hey, you bought Katrina. Why didn't you buy this book? Why didn't you buy this other book? And they all said the same thing.
Why did you buy the fart book? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because like it still kind of like tonally felt like it was still, I thought they would like it. But what they all told me was like, A, it wasn't comics. B, it wasn't fantasy. C, mm-hmm. It wasn't monsters. And like, those are the things that they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went back from that. They told me other things, but like just for the sake of this conversation, I'm trying to simplify it. I went back and I designed a book called Monsters and Other Scary Shit, mm-hmm. which was an anthology full of 30 stories, 55 creators. I asked them what their favorite fandoms were, who their favorite creators were, and I basically packed the book with all of these people.
Yeah.
And then I went back to them and I said, hey, remember what you were telling me about a year ago? Well, like, here it is. And they like flipped their shit. It became it raised more in its launch than all of the previous books that we had made combined.
Wow.
In their launches. And it's all because I had a bunch of people who bought our books. It's best if they buy your books, but like you or your product, but like, I'm assuming most of the people that listen to this like aren't at that point yet. Mm-hmm. If you have an audience though of people who are actually buying things from you, then they become your first mailing list people, and they become like the core of the rest of the stuff that you will build out, hopefully.
Yeah.
As long as that's the direction you want to take. I happen to really love monsters and fairy tales and mythology and all of the things my audience loves. So it made sense for me to keep going down that road. And now when you have the audience and the product, and they're kind of, that's all business is. Like, it's two things. It's audience and product. Those are the two pieces. And once you have it, that sort of virtuous loop on a small scale, that's when you can start looking at, okay, now I know exactly who my people are and what they like. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to go find other random people out there and start throwing them through the chipper shredder. So that's part three is like, I'm going to throw them into the top of this like big triangle, this big funnel. And some of those people, all of those people are now going to know me. Once mm-hmm. they know me, a certain percentage are going to like me. Some percentage of that are going to trust me, and then some will buy from me, and then some will buy from me again and become lifelong fans. And like, that's what you're looking for, the lifelong fan, that virtuous lifelong fan cycle. And so it becomes really a game of finding as many human beings in the entire world who are kind of fit the model,
right.
And then tossing them into the top of this funnel and watching some of them filter out to the bottom. And your job for part three is to basically figure out how to take someone who knows you to loving you and becoming that like super fan of yours.
Right.
And so there's all sorts of like tricks for your autoresponder sequence and other ways that you can do that. But then once you have step three, which is like, okay, I understand how to get someone from knowing me to loving me in a very effective manner. Right.
Nice. Yeah.
You're still not knowing that, you're still not doing that at scale, because you don't want to put a huge amount of money into it until you have the rest of these mechanisms working. You mm-hmm. want to make sure that you have a fan, you know, your fan, you have a product. And once those super fans see that product, they're going to buy it. Right.
Yeah.
Because that is how you get positive ROI on all of the marketing that you do. If you don't have this part at the beginning, product and audience, mm-hmm. you will never get to the point where you have a super fan. If you don't know how to get your super fan to buy your product effectively, or to find a super fan effectively, then your marketing is going to be more expensive. But mm-hmm. once you have that, then it becomes about scale. And then it becomes really easy, because now you know your product, your autoresponder sequence is working, and your process to ingratiate them is working. You know it has a positive ROI, and now you're just looking for places, cross promotions and podcast swaps and advertising and buying lists, and all of these things just become ways to bring people into your ecosystem and then drive them through to the bottom. And if you've done it right, the first three steps right, you should be making $2 for every dollar you spend, or $1.50 for every $2 you spend. And if you can do that, you can do it like at infinitum. You can do it forever. And that's when you are, not every marketing thing is going to work, of course, mm-hmm. but on its good days, maybe you get 5-1. On its bad days, maybe you get 1-1. But you're still generally making money at that time. And what I find is that people are very interested in the scaling part. because that's the sexy part.
Yeah.
But like having 20,000 people on your mailing list means nothing if they're not going to buy from you. So it is really all about, and what the main course that I sell and teach is about how to do those first three steps so well that by the time you get to step four, it's basically just, cool, I've got $10,000. Now let's make it $20,000. And so that's generally how I worked with my company, and how I work with authors and other people too, is I get the, I try and work in those stages. And it took me until about the middle of 2017 to get to 2,000 people on my mailing list. And it took me a year to get to 75,000 people on my mailing list. So like once you have all of that stuff working, and granted, our company was still like functioning and it was still like profitable before then, but like we were really rocking and rolling after we like figured out the process and we knew the exact products that our fans liked and we knew how to find the new ones. We do shows around the country to like bring more people into our ecosystem. That's when we spend most of our marketing budget,
right?
Because we know those are the right people for us. And then it just became, what it became then was taking our pretty niche product and widening it out so that more people would respond to it. So we went from like a very niche product, and every stage of that became trying to bring our old fans along while expanding the market. So our next product after The Monsters and Other Scary Shit was a book called Cthulhu is Hard to Spell, which is all ages Lovecraft. And that one went like bananas on, and that one still goes bananas. It is our best selling book, but it all came from those previous stages.
Okay. You know, and I thought for a second, I thought I saw a pattern in the book names, because you had Ichabod Jones, and then you had Katrina, and then there is another book, and then the Monsters one. And I thought, well, maybe there was another book in between that started with an L. And then you said the next one was Cthulhu. And I'm like, bah, there goes that theory. So, but that is amazing stuff. And I've been sitting here, seriously, I'm probably going to have to push this up to YouTube and let it transcribe this podcast, because otherwise I'd be sitting here typing notes like crazy and the microphone will pick it up and it'll be like, you know, while you're talking. And I just wanted to be like super quiet. But I mean, you make it seem so easy, and there's some stuff that I could probably talk with you about later on, but kind of trying to find ways to identify those MVPs, those people that are like, yeah, they're continuing to like my stuff, and then like automatically determine like who are those people and identify them and say, hey, this person has liked your last 5 out of 20 posts. You know, you might want to, I'm going to go check them out. And that's something like kind of on the side we do a little bit with what we're doing. You know, we do a lot of stuff with software test automation, but a lot of that carries over to social media as well. But there have been some neat things that we've been able to do just in the past couple months that have like saved a ton of time, and it helps build that audience like what you're talking about, right there in social media. So we may have to have a separate conversation. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll be honest, like the real scale comes from advertising. Like you don't get that much scale without advertising. Maybe one in a million will get that scale, like from going viral. You can't rely on that. But advertising is a whole lot easier if you are at least breaking even on that advertising after you make it. So a lot of people that I know are doing what's called the break-even funnel, where they're just trying to break even on the initial acquisition cost of finding a person. And then once they find that person, their job is to upsell them and like keep them in their community. And it becomes a lot easier to do that at scale if you can do the first three parts better.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like that movie Kill Bill. You ever see that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the wiggle your big toe part? That's like the break-even funnel in my mind. It's like, I'm going to do all this crazy stuff and I'm going to get my vengeance, but first I got to wiggle my big toe, you know?
Right.
That's awesome.
I want to make, like, we went 3 years of profitability in our company before we figured out the whole like step 1, 2, and 3. So hopefully you can do it like with a much less time than me, but you can still have a profitable company that is not scaling because you don't have you don't know like what, how to get that funnel working for you yet. Right. So it's not a race. And unfortunately, most people like to think of it as a race of like how to do it like in a day or in a week. And like, frankly, our course is about how to do it in like 6 weeks. And we do try and mash all that stuff down, but a lot of this just takes time. And especially a lot of people who are trying to be entrepreneurs are like they're working full time. And, right. and it's important that like, the most important thing of all of this that I've learned in now doing this for a decade and like running multiple companies and many of them crashing and burning is like, it is all about mindset. And it's all about the idea that like, if you can move forward a little bit at a time, and most importantly, one of my favorite expressions is the only way to scale is to do the unscalable, which is, for instance, Airbnb was having problems at the beginning. And so they went from house to house looking and talking with their people and figuring out, like taking pictures of their houses. And I was listening to Sarah Blakely give a masterclass the other day. Sarah Blakely invented Spanx. Mm-hmm. So she was saying that when she got her first orders for Neiman Marcus, she would literally go to every store. Every day she would fly across the country or drive across the country to every store. And she would spend days in that store trying to find her perfect person, trying to make friends with the retailers, trying to do all of these things, because meeting your fans where they are and really taking and really figuring out what they need is going to change and revolutionize your marketing and what you can say and how you say it and why you say it. And but looking fans in the face and, or at least over like Skype, I guess maybe not over, in person right now, but by doing these things and having these deep, long conversations with them, you're going to see what they actually want and why they actually like your brand. And I promise you, whatever reason you think they like your brand is not the reason why they like your brand. Like it is not, it's never that simple as like, oh, they like my brand because X, Y, and Z. I've never done this where someone doesn't say like, oh, it's reason J. And I'm like, what?
What?
Like, I don't even highlight that. I want entrepreneurs to spend an outmoded amount of time talking to their fan and talking to their people and finding their product and spending 80% of their time thinking about their customer and what they would like. Because if you do that, then you never have to worry about what to write in a mailing list weekly. Or like all the process of like writing an actual email every week is very simple. You open the program, you type the words and you send it out. But hitting the right pain points and hitting the right like emotional notes and striking the right balance is something every entrepreneur has to find for themselves. Mm-hmm. And every time I do one of these interviews, my job is to speak in a way that the right human being will resonate with, and then those people, maybe 10%, usually it's much more like 3 to 5% of those people will migrate over, and maybe they'll check out our freebie, or maybe they'll listen to my podcast too. And then some percent of those will become super fans of that. And everything that I do is about becoming that sort of magnetic, attractive character for the right person. So someone who wants a person that talks like this to them, that is like both practical but hopeful, that tells you it's going to be hard, but like actually gives you steps to take, that like has a kind of authoritative voice, but also like speaks to them like a friend. Yeah. All of those things, all of the mannerisms that you see, like, this is not Russell Nolte, the human, like this is Russell Nolte, the human, like turned up to 11 so that the right person will respond to them. And especially when you're out like doing other media, like when I'm at shows or when I'm on someone else's podcast, suddenly I have to be like Russell, because I've only got 30 minutes. Like when it's someone's in my audience, they know me enough that I don't have to like, be Russell times 50. But right. here, like, I've only got a couple of minutes. But the reason I can do all of that stuff is because of all of the decade of work that I've done before this, telling people exactly who I am, why, and getting people to tell me what they like about it, and molding right. it, and caress, and like cutting off edges, and fine tuning the machine that is me, who's the best marketing tool in the company. It, just like you're the best marketing tool in your company, so that you don't only you present the best part of yourself, but you present the best part of yourself that people say, "I've got to go see what this person's about."
Yeah, man. Well, I got to say, and I mean, for the people listening, this isn't going to get pushed up as video. I forgot to mention this is audio only, but I have had the biggest grin on my face because, man, I resonate with you. And as you were listing, like, the qualities that you want to pull out, like you're speaking as a friend, you're authentic, you're authoritative, you know your stuff. And I'm like, that is your brand. I get that. And you're true to it. So that's awesome. So I'm actually pumped. So is there a way to, like, if somebody were interested in finding out more about how to set up a mailing list, how to find that target persona, that avatar, how to build a product around them, where can they go to find out more? Is it the website that you sent
sure.
me before?
Sure. So if you go to thecompletecreative.com/audience, that is okay. our, it's about 20-minute webinar about okay. like how to start with one person and then move to many people. I have a course called Build a Rabid Fan Base, which is technically not open yet. But if you email me at russell@wannabepress.com, that's 2 S's, 2 L's, mm-hmm. I can give you a link to it so that you can, just you guys, for special for your audience, I'll give you a link so you can check it out. Or if you just okay. have questions, you can email me at russell, russell@wannabepress.com. I also have in my podcast archives, if you look up at thecompletecreative.com/podcast or on Stitcher or iTunes or Google Play, I have several interviews that I've done about how to build a rabid fan base or how to build an audience from scratch. And if you mm-hmm. look for those sort of keywords, it's probably 5 or 6 talks that I've given that they're kind of the same, but you can also see how they evolved over time. So those are the 3 that I recommend. Either go to thecompletecreative.com/audience, email me at russell@wannabepress.com. I do take on select one-on-one clients. Mm-hmm. It's not the core of what I do, but I definitely do take one-on-one clients out, especially in this climate. It's hard to, like, I have so much more time, so I can actually take on one-on-one clients. Usually don't have time to do it, but now I'm like stuck at home all day. Go to the Complete Creative Podcast Archives. There's almost 200 episodes, and we cover everything about how to build an audience, how to build and how to make the best work of your life and share it with the world.
Nice. Well, I got to catch up to you. I don't have 200 episodes yet, but I'll get there someday.
Well, it took since 2016, so yeah. It's that's the nice thing about being on the, you know, everyone starts with one episode, right? Like yeah. everyone starts with a single episode or a single piece of content, or I've written hundreds of blog posts now, but I remember back in 2007 where I started and I wrote my first one and I was like looking up in awe of other people who've written like 100. And now I look at someone who's written 1,000 and I'm like, oh, probably going to get there pretty soon, or like all of the books that we've put out or all of that stuff. Like, it's the most important thing to remember is that, like, you can't judge yourself from other people. You have to judge yourself on where you are and where you were yesterday, because on social media or here, or we're all seeing the people at their best. Like, everybody mm-hmm. that I've ever had on my show, I'm getting the best hour of their life. Not that right. this is the best hour. Not that, like, this, not, I'm not trying to be like, this is the best hour of your life. Like, but like, I'm getting them like to like tune out all of the things, give the undivided attention and like really focus. And I remember when I started listening to these podcasts, everybody was just like killing it all the time. And it wasn't mm-hmm. until I got to do it for a while, I was like, oh, like, we're giving, we are, our job is to give you the best content and then and inspire you. But that's really important to know that, like, I get off this call and I go right back to work in the middle of this COVID-19 epidemic where like half of my revenue has been cut off, just like everybody, just like every other person. The difference is that I'm going to get up and I'm going to do what I can to like figure it out. I did in 1 week, I figured out how to do a live seminar, a live like 8 hour, no, it was 12 hour live event. Virtually through StreamYard. And on one Friday, the Friday before, I bought like a domain. And by the following Friday, I was running this like huge 30 person, like live virtual conference. And it's really only because I can get punched in the mouth and like get up very quickly now. But that's not always the case because we all start with one podcast, one blog post, one book, one piece of content, one page at a time. And even when you're at a stage like I'm at, it's still one blog post at a time. It just so one episode at a time. It's just that I can look back at 100 episodes or 200 episodes and say, well, I've already done this many times. So if someone comes into my universe, they can like, they have a lot of stuff to catch up on.
Yep. And it's a huge authority builder too. You know, having that content out there, just lends a lot of credibility. Well, I want to find out, you know, what, you know, if you wanted to recommend somebody else to do a podcast, add one more to the list here for the Hot Mic at Arch DevOps, what would your advice be? Like, why would somebody want to be on the podcast?
On your podcast?
Yeah.
This was great. I mean, I always like going on every podcast, like, cause they all operate very differently. But the thing I really enjoy about this podcast is it was quite free form.
Yeah.
Some podcasts give me like a list of questions beforehand and like it kind of freaks me out. Or they send me an email that with like 20 asks of like their Facebook page and like watch an episode and do a dance and give a testimonial and all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate when someone doesn't do that and just says, hey, just show up and we'll have a conversation and like, it'll be good. And it'll be as good as it can be. And we're going to try it because most of my day is spent recently I've been doing a lot more podcasts than I have. And I've been noticing that the asks that they ask at the beginning before you even show up are like very high.
Yeah.
Like almost as if like, had I known, I wouldn't have agreed to be on the podcast. Cause it was quite a lot. It's like, make sure to follow the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, leave a review of the podcast, watch the podcast. And I'm like, I can't do this for 100 shows. So yeah. I appreciate a show like this, which you came on and we sort of found the episode together and you sort of let it move and flow. But then once you had the episode, like you knew what you were like, you kind of were like, hey, we should talk about the mailing list. Like you really dove in on that. So
yeah.
That's why I think someone should be a guest on this show.
Well, it was fun. And I know when I send the thing out for people to sign up, there's like one question on there. It's like, you know, other than the standard, like, how'd you get started? What are your successes, challenges, things like that? What else do you want to talk about? You got anything? And you said, no, not really. I'm like, awesome. It's going to be free form. I love those. So, well, it's been an absolute pleasure meeting with you. And I got to ask, I can't remember, how did you hear about this? Did you hear about it on Spotaguest or Reddit? You were on Spotaguest? Okay. Because I put stuff out on Reddit and then I get people hitting me up for episodes. I'm like, I don't know who this person is because there's the anonymity there. I can't say that word. And it's like, I have no idea who this is. So exciting. So, well, I'm glad that we found each other, man. And I will be following up with you a little bit later. And if you're listening to this podcast, you ought to get with Russell. This guy knows his stuff. He's authentic. You'd love him. So really good talking with you today. And I hope you stay safe and healthy. And I look forward to catching up with you at a later time, man.
Thanks so much. It was great.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye.